Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We are talking about the Billy Meier case this afternoon. Hope you've enjoyed some of the guests we had last week. Jake Morphonius, Stephen Pigeon, Alfred Weber. We had Solaris on a pre-recorded show that I had done a few days earlier, and then Barb DeLong. And I talked about Emmanuel on her Blog Talk channel. So I guess we're back to kind of the standard kind of show now where I'm talking about my latest studies. And, of course, I'm in the Might of Thoughts, and I'm on page 284, which has a lot of very interesting information. So let me dive right in. It says here on 284, the psyche is colored according to the thoughts because by means of his or her thinking, the human being chooses the color, so to speak, which he or she consciously wants for his or her life, or which she or he pathologically forces into being. This is so interesting. I haven't done all the research I want to do on this. I'd like to look up the German word here for pathological, if I can find it. So, in other words, we literally force into reality what our thinking is. And the problem is, we have not only conscious thinking, but subconscious and unconscious thinking. And sometimes what we force into reality is fear that's down in the subconscious layer. You might be a little bit aware of, but not completely. So the key, of course, is to controlling our thoughts. So the psyche, what is the psyche? And they said the psyche is colored according to the thoughts. The psyche is the half-material block and factor within the material body of a life form. In this case, a human being, which regulates and looks after the material, conscious, base, thoughts, and feelings. So the psyche controls the thoughts and the feelings and the material consciousness. Color, C-O-L-O-U-R, can be defined as interesting or exciting qualities or details. So we're not talking about color like red, green, or blue. But the psyche is colored what's interesting and exciting is your thoughts and qualities they bring to your psyche. Continuing on page 284, and this is kind of the title of the show, whatever the human being intensively thinks about grows in him or her and becomes fact. You could probably do a PhD research on that to try to understand it all and how it all works, but the idea is that when you're thinking about something intensively meaning you're using extreme concentration or effort very thoroughly or vigorously. So if we intensively think about something, it becomes more and more likely to become fact. A fact is something that has actual existence. Now, let me continue after that. Whatever the human being intensively thinks about grows. So as you're thinking about something, say you have this activity that you like to do and you notice you're getting better at it and you'd like to be able to do it more and you'd like to be able to share it with other people. So as you think about this, you get more and more excited and more positive about this, hopefully not overly positive, which is interesting. You want to maintain neutral positive, something that just popped in my mind again. But the more this grows in you, the more likely it is to become fact. And a fact has an existence. But whatever the human being intensively thinks about, it grows in him and it becomes fact. But something else is involved with this, something deeper. Subliminal desires, which can arise from uncontrolledness, always lie in wait as bad and negative sides. In order to penetrate the thoughts and to control them in a form which brings damage. So we have these subliminal desires, and a subliminal means below the threshold or the sensation of your consciousness. So you have a desire that's below, it's just below, you're not completely aware of it. There's maybe a, maybe you have a suspicion that there's something down there. But a subliminal means a threshold of sensation or consciousness perceived by or affecting someone's mind without being aware of it. So you can have a desire, a subliminal desire that's affecting your mind, and you're not really completely aware of it. Sometimes I think we have a clue, suspicions or whatever. What is a desire? A desire is a strong feeling of wanting to have something or wishing for something to happen. So we have these desires that are below our threshold of awareness. And we have a threshold of awareness. Threshold would be another good word to kind of really look at in detail. Now, I came across something in Ask Its Explanations Part 1. And she comments on how, in some ways, all of the negative desires on the earth, sometimes many of them will have a, bring about a good end. And she didn't really explain that in detail. She said it this way: thus, their death-bringing intrigues and desires for power will be ultimately transform toward good purposes. And I was reading an article earlier in the week about the CEO of Amazon. Sorry about that. The CEO of Amazon, Jeff Bezos, who makes, and this article said he makes something like $3,182 per second. And I did a little bit of math, and if I didn't make any mistakes, I think I came up with $190,000 a minute that Jeff Bezos makes. And it was $11.5 million an hour that he would make. And I don't know if Amazon is making money 24 hours of the day, but I think I just assumed 8 hours, and I think the number would be what? It would be almost 100 million, getting close to 100 million for a day. Now, so the reason I bring that up is because Ask It, I think she's talking about the elite on the earth, their death-bringing intrigues and desires for power. Some of these bad things that seem like they're hopeless and very much overwhelming, somehow I think they'll be transformed into good purposes. Anyway, that's my spin on it for now. So, but we're talking about thinking. And your thinking, whatever you're thinking intensively about, eventually it's going to become fact. Remember, thoughts produce feelings. Good thoughts produce good feelings. Now, good feelings also produce more good thoughts. So those two feed each other. Eventually, good feelings will also produce good habits, and the good habits bring good circumstances into your life. But if you have wrong thinking, this can lead to oversaturation. Oversaturation is you're just overwhelmed by circumstances or things. And that will lead to an absence of creativity. You just, you know, you're lying around, you have no initiative. You also have a lack of ideas and a lack of initiative. So you just kind of, this wrong thinking really bogs down the whole system. And essentially, unsatisfaction will kill your motivation. It will kill your striving. You'll start to feel oversaturated. And oversaturation means to soak, to impregnate, to imbue thoroughly or completely. It means to cause a substance to unite with the greatest possible amount of another substance through a solution, a chemical combination, or the like. And I think when unsatisfaction sets in, we become oversaturated with our own negative thinking, much like we become oversaturated with the endless repetition of the same episodes of a sitcom or a commercial or on television. And oversaturation leads to this absence of creativity and an absence of initiative. So what we're trying to do with the book called The Might of Thoughts is not go into oversaturation, but to have good thoughts which generate good feelings and build a momentum in your life. I tell you one thing, when I'm thinking correctly, I have a lot of motivation, and I want to do things, and I'm pushed forward to do things, and I enjoy doing things, and I do things a lot better. But when my thinking is a little bit off, that's not so much the case. I slow way down, and I have a lot less initiative. Initiative is the power or opportunity to take action, to take charge before others do. Initiative also means a readiness and ability in taking action. So when you're unsatisfied, you won't have initiative. Unsatisfaction can lead to brooding, which is the showing of deep unhappiness. And unsatisfaction leads to unhappiness. So we want to avoid unsatisfaction. Unsatisfaction is the state or attitude of being discontent, to have displeasure. Unsatisfaction is the feeling of disappointment. And we produce unsatisfaction when we have unfulfillable or unreal ideas. That's one of the things I have to watch too in my life. If I get these, you get ideas that they can kind of become not realistic. You're becoming almost too optimistic. So you have to, you know, you have to see the negative and the positive here. So unreal means so strange as to appear imaginary. If something is unfulfillable, then I guess it cannot be brought into reality. But Billy said it is the nature of the might of the thoughts that every conceivable thing can come to fruition. So it's just a matter of how intensively we think about things. So, and there's probably things... Well, I don't know. I can only speculate. I wonder, in our current level of evolvement, there might be a cap on what kind of the might that our thoughts can have. That's purely speculation. I don't know. So one of the big messages I came across in this book, and that appears in my notes over and over again, is that unsatisfaction is unable to create any balance. You can't have any progress from it. So we want to avoid unsatisfaction with all of our efforts. Another thing unsatisfaction can do is it can lead to alienation. You can feel you're withdrawn, you're isolated. Now, it's interesting, but something just kind of popped into my head. The opposite of alienation would be love. For example, those amazing passages that Billy has about love, where he says love is the highest principle in all creation, and through it, everything exists and absolute logic. Every tiny plant, every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. Love will forever be the purpose of our existence. And the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. So that incredible splendor of nature is the complete opposite of being withdrawn or isolated. Now, if you have thoughts that focus on this universal love, then you have satisfaction and contentment. And when you're satisfied, you have an ease of mind. You're gratified. You're pleased. You're happy. You're fine with what you have. You're not wanting anything more. And satisfaction is the fulfillment of one's needs and expectations. So we have to look for when we're having these inner conflicts. And these inner conflicts will senselessly squander your energies. And if you find yourself in a state of inner conflict and you can't seem to snap out of it, one of the things you can do is find music. Music has a wonderful way of freeing you from this when your thoughts are stuck. And you can even become tired of yourself, which is another bad thing that happens. And you can fall into despair under those conditions. So remember, I have the little mantra that I repeat a lot. You know, the thing that I, what you should tell yourself, or some of the things you can tell yourself, there's when you get trapped in your wrong thinking. And I pull this out of the book in various pages, and I have it in my notes here somewhere, but it basically says, to tell yourself you're confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm enthusiastic, I'm thankful, I'm in harmony. Thankfulness is a good one. I'm in harmony, I persist, I persevere. Persevere means to continue in a course of action, even in the face of difficulty. You tell yourself, I endure, I am calm, I am satisfied. Now, much of our negative thinking comes from this lack of confidence, self-doubt, anxiety. And I think even a short time ago in my life, I was still much more plagued by self-doubt. And I've had these realizations within the last couple of months, on and off, when my brain really switches on. And I have this knowing that when my mind is working the way I know it can, there's really nothing that I can't accomplish. So really, it's a matter of harnessing this innate power and getting rid of self-doubt and anxiety. So starting with confidence, you break that negative cycle. And we have to control anxiety so it does not control us. And one of the things you have to do is understand the unknown. Anxiety is controlled by the intellect. So it's a very important thing to keep in mind. Even the simplest human being, the slightest and the weakest, can reach the great heights and achieve prosperity in every regard if he or she develops a greater and better self-control, composure, cheerfulness, and allows the creational nature in yourself to come to the fore. So see, we get these creational impulses and the thing to, you got to, don't suppress those creational impulses, because you'll get to the point where you're alienated from yourself and you start to feel that way. You know that Billy's writing Meditation from Clear Visibility. This is a quote from it. I feel joy's testimony within myself, and I fill it with cheerfulness, diligence, and indefatigability. So, in Svas' explanation, this was, remember when Billy was a very young boy, he had a lot of talks with Svas. and Soth told him in one case, he said, learn to control yourself in these things and to always remain calm, because that is the best weapon and the best defense against any attack is just remaining calm. So who was Soth? Soth was an extraterrestrial human that used to visit Billy back around, starting in 1943, used to send Billy these telepathic messages, and young Edward Albert Meyer, who was only about 6 or so years old, I think, when this started, would go out into the forest near his home, and then this strange silvery pear-shaped craft would sit down and land, and Soth would step out in what looked like a diver's suit. And young Billy would be lifted up as if by ghostly hands, some kind of technology would bring Billy into the ship. And I just want to read a few words that Soth told Billy. You got to remember, Soth is about 900 years old and Billy's about 8 years old. There's a very interesting discussion about Billy's future and about when he was going to be an adult. Soth said, Edward, listen very closely to what I have to say to you. It is not for no purpose, rather for certain reasons, that the series of our meetings has come about. The cause for the argumentation leads back to determinations which lie very far back in the past, and according to which, during the time of your present life, you are fitted into a certain task determined by yourself, as was the case repeatedly in your spiritual line of reincarnations in former lives and in other personalities and bodies, in order to fulfill the mission of a proclaimer and to bring to the whole humanity peace, true love, freedom, and unity, as well as open, unencrypted knowledge of the spiritual matters and that which pertains to creation laws as well as wisdom. So the first thing that Soth is telling Billy in this third line here is basically what we've been talking about in the Nokodamian lineage, that this young boy is a part of this lineage of reincarnated, a spirit form that's reincarnated. That's reincarnated for 9.6 billion years, starting in the Lyran galaxy on a planet called Sadar in the Warren star system. Now, it probably goes back before that. That's just what I can remember. So here is the material consciousness, 6 years old, of this young boy. His spiritual consciousness is gigantic. All of this programmed into his subconscious with all of this wisdom that's just ready to just, you know, explode outward almost. And this young boy is talking to this extraterrestrial man that's 900 years old from a very, very, very highly evolved civilization that can travel from star to star with no time passing and develop biological intelligence that controls their ship, biological intelligence that's sentient. They literally are creating living ships with metallic hulls. It's the most astonishing thing in the world to really understand and appreciate what's going on here. It's far stranger than fiction. The reality of this is so amazing. So anyway, and this had to do with Nokodamian. Nokodamian somehow had the ability to make this decision to do this. So let's pick up in verse 4. It says, because of your self-determination, which far precedes the present, you have entered life as a proclaimer of the truthful creational laws and recommendations. So what are some of the creational natural laws? The law of love that we just talked about, which is a respect and effective love. It's the love of creation, which radiates from the incredible splendor of nature. It's effective love. It's based on reverence and respect. There's also the law of striving, which you should be continually working, continually challenging your mind and body. We've got to constantly be pushing ourselves forward. And it's the only way we have happiness. This is the second creational natural law, striving. The third is what we're learning about today, which is law of harmony, trying to remain harmonious in our thinking. So let's continue here. Line four, because of your self-determination, which far precedes the present, you have entered life as a proclaimer of the truthful creational laws and recommendations, and thus as a prophet, whereby, however, you will only take up your actual mission and fulfill it when the time has become ripe for it, namely the date of the 28th of January, 1975. So Sloth is telling Billy back in 1944 or 43 that your mission will really start in 1975 when he starts having his contacts with Semyase. That's his third contact. It says here, until then you will be rigorously learning in many countries of this world and with different teachers who are informed about your arrival. Now, this is very interesting because there are teachers that Billy's going to have in his life who know that he's coming. Very interesting. And who have been in connection with you for some time or will be in connection with me in the time to come. Line six here. As with all really great proclaimers and sages who have taught here on the earth since time immemorial and have brought the entire humanity the teaching of the spirit, peace, love, knowledge, harmony, and wisdom, as well as real freedom, you have also been born an inconspicuous human being. Now, let me talk about this for a minute because I was thinking about this the other day. Occasionally, you know, someone will kind of wig out on me and say, oh, you're just worshiping Billy Meyer, da, 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 da. Well, they obviously don't know Billy because, think about it. Now, Billy is a handicapped man who's lost his left arm. And I think that's one of the reasons why they had that happen to him. So he visibly appears in our psyches as a human being that has a little less because of the loss of this arm. So he's very inconspicuous. He's not in your mind of what you think as a proclaimer or a sage, but it's not. See, and that's why, and this has to be this way, I think, so that we focus on the message rather than the man. And if you think about that, and if you think about Emmanuel, that whole wrong emphasis. The emphasis is more on the man than his message. You know, they start worship. You know, they start this whole worship thing, and that's against everything that we're learning here because we're supposed to be responsible for everything that we think, for everything that we do. We're not supposed to be sheep. We're supposed to be learning the power of our own abilities, of our own mind. Let me continue. It says here, you also have to learn very much before you will take on and fulfill your task at the predetermined time. Thereby, you must, however, consider that you have to endure a quite adventurous and hard life, often full of privation. I have no jealousy when it comes to the horrific things Billy's had to endure. I would never want to go through that. Let me continue. Which from the year 1965 will still increase in a form which will demand very many powers from you in every regard. Well, what has happened? Well, Billy's had all these attempts on his life. He's had all these attacks on his character. even by the people closest to him. Let's continue here. This will particularly lead back to your spouse, who you will meet and marry in the named year, which, however, is inevitable and very closely connected to your mission. Hence, your marital step is therefore necessary, because your true powers, which you need from the very time, from that time onward, will only build up through this path which you must take. So, and I imagine the powers that they're talking about here are very much the power of thinking, the power of his thoughts, which goes back to what I've been studying so much in this book. It says, continue here. Realize, nevertheless, that everything concerning this which intrudes on you will be merciless and absolutely inevitable. And I think this is true for all of us. The challenges that we face, they're kind of merciless. You have to face these challenges, because only by you passing and also mastering this hard lesson will you be able to fulfill your duty unswervingly, without fickleness, as well as without doubt, absolutely honestly and modestly, in real love and joy for your task and for your fellow human beings. Therefore, thereby, however, you will not be spared from grief, which I know that he wasn't spared from, of which there will be very much, nor from libelous accusations and hate. Boy, he has been the most lied about person and the most hated person. He should be the most celebrated person, but he's not. And he says, which will often lead back to your spouse. Yet you must powerfully and unwaveringly confront these attacks, which will also be underpinned by attempts on your life. Because only if you master everything are you able to fulfill your mission. I guess this is one of the reasons why I come back so much to Billy's experiences with Spock, because I think it really illustrates a lot of the things that we have to learn. For example, cheerfulness and calm. I think this is one of the greatest things we have to learn in our life. We also have to learn that any change begins with us as an individual. You can't look around and wait for someone else to do whatever needs to be done. I learned this about my show a long time ago, which was a shock to me. I never thought I'd be doing monologues about the Meyer information. There is no salvation teaching as claimed by the religions and the sects, S-E-C-T-S. There is no salvation teaching, and therefore such a teaching cannot be supported, because truthfully every single human being creates his or her own salvation, himself or herself, from his or her own thoughts and their might, as well as through his feelings, through his acts and deeds, according to how he or she confronts the obligation of his or her responsibility. So that's what we're all struggling with here, to handle and deal with our responsibility and maintain cheerfulness in every circumstance of life. For some reason, this makes me think about the book, The Way to Live, and all the things that were taught there in this book. And on page 240 in The Way to Live, it says, a wise one can be recognized by three fundamental values. In leadership, he or she is strict and acts rightly. In dealing with others, he or she is gentle and noble. When instructing, His words are final and decisive. If the human being has dedicated himself or herself to all or his daily duties and has fulfilled them to his or her satisfaction, then he or she ought to put his or her leisure time to good use. This is, again, the story of striving. And not to neglect to also dedicate the necessary time for the learning of evolutive things and education, like what we're doing right now, which is learning. Regardless of the human being's age, he or she never stops learning, which is why he or she remains a student for the whole of his life and ought to fulfill evolution and further education. Let me read her something here that's related to that. It says, cheerfulness in a lived form is more valuable for the human being and more desirable than gold, platinum, or diamonds. It is a work of knowledge, of wisdom, and of lived practical experience. Now listen to what The Way to Live says about sorrow, as opposed to cheerfulness, right? It's the opposite. If a human being falls into sorrow, then he or she can certainly let this become of the greatest pain. But then he or she must bring an end to both pain and sorrow, because he or she cannot live thereby, and the existence demands progress, freedom, and the joy of life. If pain and sorrow are not overcome, then unfreedom, stagnation, resignation, and the destruction of the life arise. And I think there's a struggle that we have to maintain our cheerfulness. We have many storms in life, and we must deal with these storms as they come to us. Let me continue here in The Way to Live. Many human beings do not like to fully show that which they truthfully are, which accords with their inner nature. But when it is a matter of their life or the sorrow of human beings who are dear to them, then they reveal themselves in truthfully form. I think that's true. I don't think I show my whole self to everyone. If a righteous human being unexpectedly makes an error, then for him or her, this is tantamount to the darkening of the sun and the moon. So we exaggerate things a little bit when we make mistakes. While everyone looks at him and her, where possible, denounces him as guilty. But if an unrighteous human being constantly makes errors and loads guilt onto him or herself, then he or she feels proud and in the right, while all those of his or her kind praise and emulate him. That's something you could probably have to think about a little bit here. Here's another interesting paragraph. It says, since time immemorial, the teaching of the truth has never sunk into the dust, even through innumerable attempts at elimination were undertaken against it. You know, I think that's really what religion has done. It's tried to eliminate this teaching. And as blasphemous as it sounds, I think the New Testament was really the destruction of this teaching, the twisting of this teaching. Let me continue. But it is permanent and will also be for all the near and most distant future times. Consequently, it will always be there among the human beings to find and to come across. So this teaching will always be here. You just have to really go searching for it. Human beings of truth, virtue, and talent will always heed the higher principles of the truth and teach them to their fellow human beings, so that others who are not in possession of the knowledge of the truth and of the talents and the virtues are reminded of it and become knowing. Consequently, many human beings are in possession of the knowledge and the teaching of the truth. Thus, a human being can go everywhere so that he or she finds opportunities to get a hold of the teaching of the truth. One of the, of course, things that this book, The Way to Live, has taught about so much is striving, and the importance of striving, and that striving goes on in the spirit realm as well. And that is the time that the spirit form is preparing for the new life in the energy band around our planet. In what's there's a storage bank every spirit form has. I guess it's called the overall consciousness block. And the spirit form goes through this process of going through all the experiences that you had in your lifetime and converting them into consciousness forms like love and wisdom and peace and cheerfulness and logic and reasonableness and confidence and optimism and all the things you've learned in your life. And then these get programmed into the subconsciousness of the new personality, the new conscious mind for the new lifetime. And one of the most important things that is programmed into the subconscious is perseverance. Perseverance is the one thing that will keep pushing you forward. Perseverance and firmness and persistence. And this also requires imaginations, intentions, wishes, efforts, then a mixture of values and powers. Perseverance is steadfastness in doing something despite difficulty. Perseverance is not giving up. It is persistence. It's tenacity, the effort required to do something, to keep going to the very end, even if it's hard, even if it's difficult. Persistence is being firm, obstinate, and you just keep going to, despite difficulty or opposition. So this is one of the principal consciousness forms, I would say, is persistence, perseverance, because this particular virtue, this particular evolutive essence, is the one that kind of saves you. You know, persistence is really the bottom line. Let me continue here. Hard work matters. This is from the Meditation from Clear Visibility book. Hard work matters to me and promotes my creative capabilities, also my perseverance, the joy in working, and the will of goal achievement. But if there is no optimism, and if it is not created, then no progress will be achieved, because the thoughts are inevitably weak, and in their powerlessness they collapse, which has the further effect that purely physical weakness also appears. But the better half is the innermost nature of the spirit form. Let me continue. That is the nature of his or her own personality, and he or she himself determines and forms it according to his own will, which is why it can be fundamentally different to the real innermost spiritual nature. So your human being has three natures: the external nature, the internal nature, and the innermost spiritual nature. The innermost nature of the spirit form and the inner nature of the consciousness of the personality exists. There's also an external nature, which, as the value of the word says, is expressed outwardly into the environment. The external nature does not have to be in harmony with the inner nature of the consciousness, but it should be, and it's better if it is, of course. You want to have harmony. So we have an inner nature, we have an internal nature, external nature, and the innermost spiritual nature. And this is what we have as human beings. Let me read a little bit about what it says about the human life as it progresses on. This is from the Way to Live book. It says, at the age of 10 years, the human being's senses turn toward learning. At the age of 20 years, the human being embraces the power of their ability. At the age of 30 years, the human being is firm in his or her thinking and action. At 40 years, the human being has left his or her doubts regarding the truth and the knowledge behind him. At the age of 50 years, the human being knows the life necessary creation of natural laws and recommendations and follow them. At 60 years, the human being has comprehensively opened his consciousness for the truth. At 70 years, the human being can accede to his or her wishes without overstepping the limits of which are his rights. I think that there is a very interesting thing on page 34 in this book. And this is fulfilling your duty to yourself. And we have these duties to ourselves, one of which is taking care of our health, taking care of our physical health, our psyche, also cleanliness and the care for our bodies. Let me continue. If the human being does not continually pay attention to him or herself and does not fill his or her duty to himself and his or her own duty, then she declines and ends in misery, whereby even suicidal thoughts are not infrequent. In many cases also come realization. Therefore, the fulfillment of one's duty to oneself and one's own duty are also anchored in this value and thus in the thinking that one's own psyche shall be kept healthy and blith. I don't know what that word means off the top of my head, so that it cannot succumb to any kind of attack. But the psyche can only be harmed through feelings and thoughts of an unreal nature. Thus, through imaginations, which are called forth through anxiety, suffering, worry, and grief, and so forth. And I think I'm guilty of through bringing out imaginations through anxiety. This is very interesting because I sometimes find myself doing that. I find kind of the imagination and the anxiety running off together. But imaginations arise through belief and other irrational assumptions, whereby, especially to mention, are imaginations which arise from the human beings suffering from worry, grief, anxiety, and pain, which he or she assumes that she cannot bear and cannot master. Thereby, he or she allows his or her thoughts and feelings uncontrolled to simply have free rein and allows him or herself to become overcome by them without being clear and having conscious the factors that arise from that which negatively, incisively interferes with the psyche and begin to demolish and destroy it. I remember in The Mind of Thoughts it says that the negative thoughts disturb the feelings and thereby the psyche. Thereby one's own duty and duty to self is turned into the exact opposite of that which edifying actually should have the upper hand in the human being. So we should be edifying ourselves rather than thinking thoughts which produce anxieties and then imaginations. We imagine horrible, you know, sometimes they are not even concrete. You just like have these bad feelings which come out of nowhere. Should protect him or her from the hardship associated with the wrong dealing with him or herself. Therefore, May every human being protect him or herself from any imagined suffering. That's what we're doing. We're imagining suffering. You know, you get ready to get into your car and you're ready to go out into the traffic on the expressway and you're thinking, oh my goodness, it's going to be crazy again. And we want to avoid having any kind of accidents out there. So we have these imagined sufferings in the physical regard, just as in the psychical regard, in the right dealing with oneself, body, and psyche, are to be given attention first of all, and only in the second position are all other things to which the human being must turn his or her attentiveness to. The human being must always be strong in relation to him or herself and in him or herself. And it must never arise that he or she lets him or herself fold through any small adverse occurrence or through any small physical indisposition or discomfort. The human being, therefore, always must be brave. This is very, very good advice. Always be brave. And this is really, I notice my own thoughts now that I'm analyzing them in a little more detail. And this is one thing you should do. You should, like, when you study this information, I think you should spend probably more time in the contemplating of it. Like, if you spend 5 minutes studying, you might want to spend 10 minutes contemplating what you've just read. You know, put the book down, go off, walk around a little bit, and just try to think about what it is you just have read. The human being, therefore, always be brave and on top of things. Be always courageous in all things. Always confident. That's why I have to constantly repeat to myself, I'm confident. I'm optimistic. Everything is transitory. And time never stands still. Whatever may happen in the world or somewhere in the infinite expanses of the universe, everything passes and finds an end. Especially those things in the human life which relate to physical indisposition and discomfort, as well as to physical effects such as worry, grief, anxiety, and pain of all kinds, and so forth. So we're talking about fulfilling our duty to ourselves, to not allow yourself to fall into those anxieties, to not allow your imagination to run wild. Therefore, it is a fulfillment of our duty to ourselves in dealing with oneself. So we have to deal with ourselves in a certain way. In every regard, we should be steadfast, so we're not overcome by evils. Through the real overcoming of all that which is negative, slowly but surely, your whole life is mastered. After which, all that which is negative is then steered into forgetfulness. And this is so true. Do not keep recalling things that fell out of your control. That, you know, you wanted to achieve a certain thing and you weren't able to achieve that. And maybe certain individuals, people, animals, whatever, suffered because of some failure. You have to let go of failures to have that forgetfulness. Worries, anxieties, adversities, indispositions, discomforts, and pain, which have been, no longer have a disturbing and burdening effect. So you cannot let these things from the past. One of the fulfilling of your duty to yourself is to let the past go. It's a hard thing to do. But do not allow these things to have a disturbing and burdening effect. Let them go. This is very quickly achieved, especially when the entire attentiveness is steered away. So your attentiveness should be steered away from burdens and attached to something which is neutral, like a moment of gladness, something that you enjoyed very much. Think of a wonderful time that you enjoyed very much. And if you yourself want to be healthy and want to take joy in yourself exactly as you can take joy in your fellow human beings and in your environment when you live according in accordance with them, then you can only do this if you live in the fulfillment of your duty to yourself and the fulfillment of your own duty. For that, however, it is absolutely necessary that you respect yourself so that others can respect you. And in fact, others respect you only when you're able to give yourself sufficient respect. So self-respect is critical in fulfilling your duty to yourself. And self-respect is one of the most important things that you can do. If a human being wants to live truly and fairly, then he or she has to consider and understand that the fulfilling of your duty to yourself is always the most important thing. And I forget that a lot. And I'm trying to... That's a struggle that I'm not as aware of as I should be. You should never self-chastise yourself. You should have no self-abuse. You should have no feelings of inferiority. You should have no bitterness. Be kind-hearted, be big-hearted, be good-natured, be gentle to yourself, care for the health of your body, challenge your body and mind, and never devote yourself to your passions or your addictions, your vices. Use your intelligence, use your rational logic. And if you do that, you'll have enjoyment in the fulfillment of your responsibilities. You must not oppress yourself through self-chastisement or self-abuse, or through the self-disregard or bitterness, or through feelings of inferiority and so forth. Also, just as the depravity of your I, you must not fall into self-neglect, or don't flatter yourself. Through the real overcoming of all that is negative, slowly but surely, your whole life can be mastered, fulfilling your duty to yourself is critical. Always care for the health of your body and of your psyche. Fulfilling your duty to yourself is one of the most critical things. Always speak the truth. Always act and think and speak in good form and decently. Don't let your clothes look ragged. Don't let yourself look ragged. Don't let yourself be controlled by your desires. Remember we talked about earlier the subliminal desires that we have just below our level of awareness. Don't be in bad temper. This is another part of fulfilling your duty to yourself. I sometimes feel like I'm becoming a grumpy old man. I have to watch that. You always be lower or higher in some way to the next person you may be higher in some places, you may be higher in other places in terms of your involvement. So you should never really don't be comparing yourself in that way, and don't fall into the trap of boredom. I want to thank the folks that's been listening to the program. I hope these programs are as helpful for you as they are for me. So anyway, this is the Meyer Information. We've been quoting things from the Way to Live book, from the psyche, from the book called The Psyche and the book called The Might of Thoughts. Have a great weekend. Hopefully I'll be chatting with you again tomorrow. Have a great day.